Chapter 12.
Why the hell doesn't he answer? Tony asked, over his comm set.
Maybe he's still sleeping?
Lynn offered, over comms, from back at the LRV.
After being stranded out there for 2 days, would you be sleeping late or waiting at the bank for rescue?
Frank commented, as he stood waiting on the shore from where he and Tony launched their rescue raft 30 minutes earlier.
The fact that we're bringing food is reason enough for Mac to be standing at the shore, waving his arms frantically, Tony added,
as he steered the slowly moving boat between the tufts of taller marsh plants protruding from under the floodwaters. Their makeshift water jet propulsion system was performing well, though it was slow. Being the smaller of the two, they had agreed Tony would go alone to save weight. Thus, Frank had been left on the far shore with the ETCs and the trailer to await their return.
I don't know, guys,
Lynn chimed in.
This is making me a little nervous. Me too,
Frank agreed.
Would you two relax? Tony said as he rounded the next tuft. I'm sure they're just asleep.
Without his headset?
Frank asked.
I don't remember any of us wearing our headsets when we were sleeping in that cargo pod last month, Tony reminded Frank.
The chatter went silent for a moment. Then Lynn spoke up.
Maybe you're right, Tony.
I'm sure I'm right, he insisted. Let's just wait a while before we start worrying.
A few minutes later, Tony could see the southern bank. From back at the LRV, Lynn had been trying to hail Mac and Sarah, using everything from the comset bands to the high-gain digital telemetry system. But there was still no answer.
I'm closing on the southern bank now, Tony reported.
Stay alert, Lynn warned. Remember, you're by yourself, so don't walk into anything you're not sure about. That's right,
Frank agreed.
Man, you two are making me nervous, Tony muttered.
Just be careful,
Lynn reiterated.
Yes, ma'am.
Tony turned off the water pump, coasting until the bow made contact with the shore. He jumped off to the right of the boat into the knee-deep water and waded up to land, pulling the boat halfway out of the water before tying it to the nearest small tree only a few meters away.
Okay, the boat's secure. I'm going to go find him now.
Do you know where their camp is?
Lynn asked.
I've got a pretty good idea from the flyover images we took the other day, he assured her. The camp was out in the open, so it shouldn't be too difficult to locate. Besides, this valley's not that big.
Tony strolled up the bank, stopping at the top to scan the area before setting off to find his friends. A few minutes later, he came across the ravine and waded through the shallow water and up the other side. Once on the far side, he could see the small canyon stretched out before him. There, sitting to the right of the center of the open meadow, was a small silver hut, a trickle of gray smoke wafting up from behind.
I've got a visual on their camp. I can see the hut, about 60 meters ahead. Mac, this is Tony, he called over his comm set. Do you copy me?
There was still no answer.
Maybe his comm set's busted?
Tony guessed, hoping for a simple explanation.
Maybe,
Frank reluctantly agreed.
Something doesn't feel right,
Lynn insisted.
Tony, be careful.
I can circle around to the west, Tony suggested. From there, I can get a better look at the entrance to the hut from the cover of the trees before I approach.
Good idea,
Lynn agreed. After making his way around to the west side of the hut, Tony crouched behind a large reddish-colored tree at the edge of the forest. He pulled out his visual scanner and studied the campsite at maximum magnification. The site was in disarray, with survival gear scattered everywhere as if someone had left the site in a hurry. The skeleton of a small animal was lying on the ground by the smoldering fire pit.
I'm not sure, but it might be time to start worrying.
What is it?
Lynn asked.
I can see the whole camp now, and it's a mess. Gear is strewn about. I know Mac's a slob, but not this bad.
Yeah, and Sarah's with him, and she wouldn't put up with it,
Lynn added.
Tony, use your rifle,
Frank suggested.
What?
Lynn said in horror.
Did you say to use my rifle?
Tony asked.
Frank!
Lynn barked.
His rifle scope will automatically start sending telemetry. We can see what his scope sees from any other rifle scope's monitor.
Skipper? Tony asked. He knew it was her call to make.
Go ahead, Tony,
Lynn agreed. Tony put his visual scanner back into its holster on his hip and unslung his rifle, checking that his safety was still on. His small targeting scope display, just forward of the stock, flickered to life as he pressed the power button, and the image of the camp appeared in full color, complete with a target reticle in the center and targeting data scrolling in the upper corners.
Are you getting this?
He asked in a whisper, as he aimed the rifle scope at the campsite and zoomed the magnification in to its strongest setting.
Crystal clear,
Frank reported.
Are you getting this also, Lynn?
Yes, I've got it now.
You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it sure doesn't look right,
Frank agreed.
Do you want to call out to them? See if anyone pokes their head out?
Lynn asked.
No thanks. I'd rather not alert something to my presence, if you don't mind.
Something?
Lynn wondered.
You know what I mean, Tony said. I'm going to move in closer.
Tony adjusted the rifle's strap, wrapping it around his left forearm, ensuring that it wouldn't get knocked from his hands. He rose from his hiding place, holding his rifle up and ready at shoulder height, and proceeded toward the campsite, walking in a semi-crouch to offer a smaller target to any would-be threats. With one eye trained on the scope display and the other one on the periphery in front of him, he made his way out of the tree line, taking one cautious step at a time as he moved slowly and quietly across the meadow. Adjusting the magnification on his targeting scope down one step with every few meters, he moved the rifle slowly from left to right, scanning 45 degrees to either side of the campsite as he approached.
I'm almost there, he whispered.
Frank watched on his rifle's scope display, keeping his hands well away from the trigger to avoid discharging his weapon involuntarily.
Lynn, he called quietly.
Yes?
Is your weapon loaded?
He knew that she only had basic weapons training, and the last thing they needed was for her weapon to go off inside the LRV.
Negative,
she responded.
The magazine is still in the weapons locker, and the chamber is empty.
Good.
How dumb does he think I am?
Lynn asked no one in particular. Maria, Laura, and Adia were all gathered around her, watching the display over her shoulder.
He's just double-checking, being cautious, Maria assured her.
They watched the view on Lynn's rifle scope as Tony entered the camp, his scope trained on the entrance to the small, shiny hut as he crossed the last few meters.
Oh, I can't stand this,
Laura commented, as she watched the image on the display bounce a bit as Tony extricated his left hand from the rifle strap. Maria's hands went up, clenched in front of her chest, as she watched nervously.
Be careful, Tony, Adia whispered.
They watched as Tony's left hand appeared from the left side of the display screen, reaching down for the flap. Maria held her breath as Tony's fingers reached into the gap in the flap and slowly pulled it open. Suddenly, the view on the rifle scope monitor changed its angle as Tony dropped to one knee and swiftly pushed his way through the flap covering the opening into the hut. Laura let out a little squeal, startled by the abruptness with which the display seemed to magically enter the hut, and was alarmed even more by the bouncing of the rifle scope's view as Tony entered.
What the?
Lynn instinctively moved her head closer to the display to get a better look. All she could make out of the bouncing image was Sarah, naked, scrambling to cover herself up, and in the process pulling the sleep sack off Mac, revealing his naked body as well.
No way!
Laura exclaimed. The image suddenly shifted straight up, showing only the woven ceiling overhead, after which their monitor lost its link with Tony's weapon system, presumably because he had turned it off.
Did I just see what I think I saw?
Adia asked.
Looks like you've got my dish duty for a week,
Maria said to Laura, a satisfied smirk on her face. The look of disbelief on Lynn's face quickly turned to a mixture of surprise and tentative relief.
Excuse me,
Tony apologized as he lowered his rifle. A broad grin formed on his face. Sarah pulled the flimsy sleep sack over her naked torso to hide, poking Mac in his side to wake him.
Mac,
Sarah said.
"Not again, honey. I'm too tired," he complained, still half asleep.
"Honey?" Tony asked.
Sarah pulled the sleep sack over her head, mortified.
"Mac, wake up, you idiot!"
"Geez, Sarah," Mac groaned, opening his eyes.
"Good morning, sweetheart," Tony teased.
Mac tilted his head up to look at him.
"Hey, Tony!
Should I come back later?"
"Now is good," Mac agreed, rubbing his eyes of what little slumber he had gotten. "Did you bring us some food?"
"Mac!"
Sarah squealed in horror from under her sleep sack. Mac squinted, wincing in pain at Sarah's shrill tone.
"Give us a minute," he asked as he sat up, unconcerned with his own nudity.
"Take your time," Tony agreed, still smiling. "I'm in no hurry."
Tony settled down to wait, kneeling in the doorway with his rifle held across his chest, grinning from ear to ear.
"Did you sleep well?"
"Tony, please,"
Sarah pleaded from under the sleep sack.
"Should I go?"
Tony asked Mac, pointing over his shoulder at the exit.
"Get out,"
Sarah commanded, still unwilling to come out from under the shiny fabric. Mac nodded, his face squinting up in a mischievous smile.
"I think that would be best."
Tony turned and exited the hut, laughing. He stood up, slinging his weapon over his shoulder.
"You too, jerk!"
Sarah screamed from inside the hut.
"What?"
Mac asked.
"I can't believe you two," she complained. "Do you know how embarrassing that was?"
"What did I do?"
Mac asked. Tony laughed to himself as Sarah continued to chastise Mac. He reached down to his comset pack as he moved away from the hut, switching the mic control from voice-activated to push-to-talk.
"They're fine,"
he reported, with a chuckle.
"Yes, we could see that,"
Lynn confirmed. Tony could hear Maria and Laura laughing in the background.
"Frank?"
"Yes, Tony?"
Frank replied, with a humorous lilt in his voice.
"I'm going to give him a few minutes to get, organized. Then we'll be heading back to the raft."
"I quite understand,"
he chuckled.
"I'll be waiting patiently."
"Just get out!"
Sarah demanded from inside the hut. Tony turned back around, just in time to see Mac stumble through the doorway, still naked.
"Can I at least have my clothes?"
Mac yelled back toward the hut. A second later, Sarah's arm poked out of the flap, her hand clutching Mac's pants and shirt.
"Thank you,"
he responded, taking it from her hand.
"Rough night?"
Tony asked.
"No, not really,"
Mac said casually, scratching his head and stretching.
"You want to put your clothes on, buddy? You're going to scare the wildlife," he joked.
"Oh, yeah."
"I hope you know what you're doing,"
Tony whispered to him.
"I heard that,"
Sarah called from inside. Mac rolled his eyes at Tony as he pulled his pants on. It took them over an hour to get back across the water, their speed sharply reduced by the extra weight of two more bodies on board.
"Hey, Frankie!"
Mac waved as they approached the opposite shore, where Frank was waiting for them. Mac jumped from the still-moving boat into the knee-deep water, splashing all the way up to shore, giving Frank a great big hug.
"It's good to see you."
Tony grounded the boat gently, tossing the bow line onto shore, before helping Sarah out of the little boat.
"How are those ribs, Sarah?"
Frank asked, as she gave her a gentle, welcoming hug.
"Not bad. Mac took pretty good care of me."
"So we saw,"
Frank teased.
"What?"
Sarah didn't understand.
My gun scope was sending back telemetry the whole time,"
Tony admitted sheepishly.
"Oh, great."
Sarah was turning red all over again.
"Well, as long as nobody else saw us."
"Well,"
Frank tried to ease into it.
"About that."
"You're kidding,"
Sarah said, with a deadpan expression.
"Who else?"
"Pretty much everyone, I'm afraid." Sarah's look of embarrassment quickly faded into one of rage.
"Mac,"
she began, turning toward him,
"I'm going to kill you."
"How is this my fault?"
Mac defended.
"I told you to set the alarm on your watch."
Frank and Tony watched the exchange in amazement as they started securing the raft onto the trailer.
"Man, this is weird," Frank commented to Tony.
"Tell me about it."
A few hours later, two ATCs pulled into camp, their little horns beeping madly in triumph. Lynn and the others came rushing out of the LRV to greet them, exchanging hugs all around. Much to Sarah's relief, no one mentioned what they had seen on Tony's gunscope feed, although she knew it was only a matter of time until someone cracked a joke at her expense. Frank watched the happy celebration as he secured the trailer and the raft. He was relieved to have Mac and Sarah back safe and sound, and it was good to see everyone so happy to be together again. Unfortunately, he couldn't help thinking about Jack and Will. He watched the joyous reunion taking place only a few meters away from him, all the while imagining what it would be like if Jack and Will were the ones returning. That's when he made his decision. Work at the LRV camp had gone back to normal. Laura was busy analyzing the genetic structures of various organisms, while Adia spent her days studying the various flora, fauna, and insect life in the valley. Frank and Tony were busy making preliminary surveys of the valley, trying to determine the best site on which to construct the new colony. Sarah was doing quite well in her little ag lab, as she tested the growth rates and characteristics of various primary earth crops in Setian soil. Mac was busy holding everything together. As soon as he would fix one thing, something else would break down. Between his maintenance chores and Sarah's demands on his time, he was lucky to get any time for his workouts. Having found a few abnormalities in Frank, Mac, and Sarah's blood, Maria spent a good deal of her time trying to understand what had caused the abnormalities. She had even gone as far as conducting unscheduled examinations of all three of them, dismissing the extra exams as safety precautions, since the three of them had been exposed to the elements considerably more than the others. Since she had no idea what was causing the abnormalities, and she could not find any indication that they posed any immediate health risk, she chose not to alarm anyone. Lynn had spent the days bouncing around from one department to another, giving a helping hand to anyone who needed it. Most of her time seemed to be spent helping Mac get ahead of the maintenance requirements. But what troubled her most was Frank's reclusiveness. It had gotten worse after Mac and Sarah's return. He would say only what was required at the morning briefings, work with Tony all day long, and then disappear out to the tool shack after dinner and stay there until bedtime. She was worried about him, but since he was doing his job, she didn't feel she had the right to say anything to him. Tony was also bothered by Frank's recent personality changes. He was pleasant and conversant during the work sessions, but strictly business. Tony wondered if it had anything to do with the flyovers of the southern ridgeline that he had lied to Lynn about before. 2 weeks after rescuing Mac and Sarah, Frank woke early, before the sunrise. Carrying his clothing and boots in his hands, he tiptoed into the airlock compartment before dressing, so as not to wake the others. Once outside the LRV, he went to the tool shack at the tail end of the LRV to retrieve two large saddlebags, a duffel bag, and an overstuffed survival pack. After securing them onto the back of an ATC, he climbed on and headed off across the valley into the light of the dawn. As he rode across the valley, he thought about what Lynn would think, what she would say, how she would feel. He had thought about writing her a note, but that would have accomplished little. What he was doing was wrong. He was breaking every rule in the book, and he knew it. But he couldn't help it. He had to do it. Jack would do the same for him.
"Laura, have you seen Frank?" Lynn asked.
"No," Laura answered, as she prepared the morning meal.
"I don't think I've seen him all morning. Did you check his bunk? Maybe he slept in today." "No, he's not there. I already checked."
"Maybe he's outside?"
"Yeah, maybe."
Lynn left the galley and headed forward, stopping on the porch to retrieve her comm set from the charger rack.
"Frank?"
she called, after donning her set. His set was not on the charger rack, which meant he was probably not on the ship.
Frank, do you copy?
There was no response. She looked down at the comset rack. Another set was missing as well.
Anyone copy?
Lynn, this is Mac.
Mac, where are you?
Tool shack.
Have you seen Frank?
Not exactly.
What do you mean, Mac?
Well, I haven't seen him, but there's some equipment missing here.
What sort of equipment?
A few digital telemetry transceiver relays, some power cells, a couple of mini dishes, and some tripods. One of the ATCs is gone as well,
Mac admitted reluctantly.
Damn it, Frank,
she swore aloud as she stormed back into the habitat.
Any idea where he's headed, Mac?
Her shouts drew the crew's attention as they were sitting down for breakfast. They had never heard that tone of voice from Lynn.
Oh, great!
What's wrong? Maria asked as she entered the wardroom.
Frank's taken off with a bunch of radio gear on one of the ATCs, Lynn announced angrily. And no one has any idea where the hell he's headed.
Tony sighed.
I might have an idea.
Lynn looked at him with a glare that sent a shiver down his spine.
Well?
She asked.
I think he might be headed for the southern ridgeline.
Why would he go there?
Laura asked.
He can't even get to the southern ridge,
Sarah objected.
The flood is still in the way.
The water has gone down some,
Tony explained.
There's now an exposed path, starting in the southwest corner of the valley. Frank asked me to do an extra flyover to check it out. It leads all the way to the summit, maybe even down the far side.
If you thought he was up to something, you should have told me,
Lynn growled.
I didn't think he was up to something, Tony said defensively.
Not really. You want me to go after him?
And do what? Take him prisoner? Shoot him?
Lynn shook her head in disbelief.
I can't believe this is happening.
I don't understand, Laura chimed in. What is it that he's up to? She asked.
I don't know, but according to Mac, he took some transceiver relays, power cells, tripods, stuff like that.
I noticed that some of the leftover energy bars are gone from the cabinet, Laura said. I just assumed Mac ate them.
I think he's going to set up a repeater on the ridge,
Maria announced. Lynn looked at her in surprise.
How do you know that?
He was talking about an idea he had a couple of weeks ago. He thought if he put some sort of repeater on the ridge, he might be able to pick up a distress signal from Jack.
Was I the only one here who didn't know?
Lynn asked in frustration.
I don't understand, Tony asked. If he wanted to set up a comm repeater, why did he take transceiver relays?
The comm sets can only be charged in the rack in the EVA bay. You can't charge them from the mini solar cells in the escape pod survival kits. Frank knows that. Assuming Jack and Will survived, their comm sets would be dead by now. But Jack's data pad can be charged from the solar cells.
But he can't communicate through it,
Tony insisted.
No, but the digital telemetry relay will put out a constant query signal, trying to initiate a telemetry link between any data pad and the LRV's mainframe.
Like a homing signal, Tony realized.
Like a homing signal, Lynn repeated in affirmation.
Not a bad idea, Tony admitted.
Except for one thing, Lynn added. There's no one alive out there to receive the signal.
How can you be so sure, Lynn?
Maria asked. No one but Frank had challenged that assumption until now, and it made Lynn feel uncomfortable. It was also a question she had asked herself on more than one occasion, but she had answered that question for herself. Now, apparently, it was time to answer it for the others.
I watched the telemetry files over and over, Lynn told them. There was nothing to indicate they might have made it out alive. All I saw was the Icarus breaking apart, right up until the time we lost the telemetry signal.
But you never actually saw the cargo bay break up?
Maria asked.
No, but then you have to admit, there might be a chance. If they managed to eject before the bay broke up, they would have hit the Icarus's plasma wake sideways. It would have burnt them to a crisp within seconds. And even if they made it through that, the pod would have been damaged.
The odds of their making it down safely are astronomical.
But there is still a chance, no matter how slight, Maria pushed.
Yes, Maria, yes, there is still a chance, a very, very remote chance, Lynn admitted.
That's why Frank can't let go of his hope.
So what? I'm supposed to just let him go and try whatever crazy stunt he wants, just because there's a slim chance that Jack might still be alive? Would that be the responsible thing to do? Hell, let's all go off looking for Jack and Will. Why not? We can finish our work up later. The colonists' needs can wait.
That's enough, Lynn, Maria chided. We all know what's at stake.
Lynn looked at their faces. They were all watching her, wondering what she was going to do next.
Yeah,
she mumbled, her head hanging down as she looked at the table in front of her.
Yeah.
Lynn started to back away from the table. She felt as if everything was falling apart around her.
Do whatever you need to today, she announced, as she turned and walked away.
Will had wandered away from camp in search of a private place to relieve himself. About 100 meters away, he found a group of large rocks that provided some concealment from the world around him. Jack had often teased Will about his need for privacy when doing his business, pointing out that there was no one around to catch him in an embarrassing moment. But Will couldn't help that he needed the privacy. It was bad enough he had to squat over a hole in the ground and bare his posterior outside in such a degrading manner. It was even worse that he had to wipe himself with leaves. He longed for the sanitary luxuries of the toilets back on the Daedalus. After digging the customary pit, Will reluctantly dropped his pants down to his ankles and assumed the usual position. It was cold this evening. Will was sure that winter was no more than a week or two away. He had seen frost in the morning for over a week now, and he could see his breath long after sunrise. Will heard a rustling sound from somewhere behind him. He spun his head around, but saw nothing except rocks. He listened intently as the wind rustled through the nearby trees. He turned his head forward again. Even if the sound was nothing, he felt it best to finish his business as quickly as possible. Then he heard something else, a heavy panting, followed by a scratching sound. The panting became louder and more distinct, as if the source of the sound had moved out into the open. Will turned his head once again, more slowly than before. On the rocks behind him stood a huge creature, covered with thick brown and gray fur. It was 2 meters tall while standing on all four legs, and had a long, powerful snout, complete with several fangs protruding from each side. Its eyes were black and soulless, set deeply on either side of the base of its snout. Its paws had long, sharp claws that scratched against the rock as it shuffled from side to side, examining Will. The menacing-looking creature watched as Will stayed motionless, looking over his shoulder, his naked butt still dangling over the pit. Without any warning, its posture turned from observer to aggressor, as it stood up on its hind legs and let out a deafening roar that nearly stopped Will's heart. Will's adrenal glands kicked into overdrive. Quickly pulling up his pants, he started to run, wanting to get as far away from the frightening creature as possible. In his haste, Will tripped, falling forward onto the ground. The beast leapt from the rock, diving toward Will, who stumbled back to his feet.